In the land of Uz, there lived a man whose name was Job. This man was blameless and upright. He feared God and shunned evil. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters, and he owned thousands of sheep, camels, oxen, and donkeys. He was the greatest man among all the people of the East. One day, the angels came to present themselves before the Lord. On this day, Satan also came with them.
Hello, Satan. What are you doing here?
Oh, you know, just checking out the real estate.
You're not happy with where you're at?
You know me, always trying to improve my situation.
And where have you come from?
From roaming through the earth and going back and forth in it.
And what do you think?
It's all right, I guess. Nothing special.
Have you considered my servant Job? He's blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil.
Whatever. He's got it easy. You've blessed everything he has. He has everything he could possibly ever want. Stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face.
Very well. Everything he has is in your hands. But you must not lay a finger on the man himself.
Excellent.
One day, while Job's sons and daughters were celebrating at a feast, a messenger came to Job and told him that all his donkeys and oxen were carried off by raiders. While he was still speaking, another messenger came and said that fire from the sky had fallen and burned up all of his sheep. He had not finished speaking when a third messenger came and told him that all of his camels had been taken by thieves. And yet, another messenger came and told Job that the house where his sons and daughters were eating had collapsed, and they had all died.
Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord has given, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised.
In all this, Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing. Meanwhile, Satan came to present himself before the Lord again.
Where have you come from?
From roaming through the earth and going back and forth in it.
And have you considered my servant Job? He's blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil. And he maintains his integrity, even though you incited me against him for no reason.
Skin for skin. A man will give anything he has for his own life. Stretch out your hand and strike his flesh and bones, and he will surely curse you to your face.
Very well. He's in your hands, but you must spare his life.
He won't last 2 days when I'm done with him. Well, see you later.
And Job was afflicted with painful sores from the sole of his feet to the top of his head. They were so bad that Job sat on the ground and took a piece of broken pottery and scraped himself with it. Yet in all this, Job did not sin in what he said, and he kept his integrity. News spread of all that had happened to Job. When they heard, Job's friends came to sympathize with him and comfort him. They sat with him for 7 days and 7 nights, and no one said a word because they saw how great his suffering was. After this, Job finally spoke.
May the day of my birth perish. That day may it turn to darkness. May the God above not look care about it. Why is life light given to those in misery, and life given to the bitter of souls? For sighing comes to me instead of food, and groans pour out like water. What I have feared has come upon me. What I have dreaded has happened to me. I have no peace, no quietness. I have no rest, but only turmoil.
In the past, your words have strengthened and supported those that have struggled, and now trouble falls upon you and you're discouraged. How can you be surprised? I mean, people are punished when they make mistakes, so you must have made some for this to happen.
If only my anguish could be weighed and all my misery placed on the scales, it would surely outweigh the sand of the seas. The arrows of the Almighty are in me. I have done nothing wrong. Therefore, I will not keep silent. I will speak out in anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. If I have sinned, what have I done to you? O watcher of men, why have you made me your target? Have I become a burden to you? Why do you not pardon my offense and forgive my sins?
How long will you say such things? Your words are a blustering wind. Does God pervert justice? If you look to God and humble yourself, he will help you. If you forget God, you will perish. You must turn and become righteous.
But how can a mortal be righteous before God? His wisdom is profound. His power is vast. Who has resisted him and come out unscathed? He performs wonders that cannot be fathomed. But when he passes me, I cannot see him. When he goes by, I cannot perceive him. He is not a man like me, that I might answer him, that we might confront each other in court. If only there were someone to arbitrate between us, to lay his hand upon both of us, someone to remove God's rod from me, then I would speak up without fear of him. But if it now stands with me, I cannot. I loathe my very life. Therefore, I will give free rein to my complaint.
Are all these words to go unanswered? You must be rebuked, Job. You say you're righteous, pure of heart, but you must have done something wrong. Turn away from your sin and turn to him, and all your troubles will disappear. Your life would be brighter. You'd be secure.
You guys are the worst! You are worthless physicians! If only you would be silent! For you, that would be wisdom. Your maxims are proverbs of ashes. Your defenses are defenses of clay. Keep silent and let me speak. Then let come to me what may. Though he slay me, yet will I hope in him. I will surely defend my ways to his face. I desire to speak to the Almighty and argue my case with God. I know I will be vindicated.
Your sin prompts you to speak. You undermine piety and hinder devotion to God.
Just let me speak, and then by all means, keep mocking me. I could speak like you guys, if you were in my place. I could make fine speeches against you and shake my head at you, but it is to God I speak. Oh God, you have worn me out. You have devastated me. Though I cry, I have been wronged. I get no response. Though I call for help, there is no justice.
There is no justice? Job, you must not say such things. It is God who is just, and it is you who is wrong.
I will never admit to you that you are right. I will maintain my righteousness and never let go of it. I long for the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone upon my head, his intimate friendship blessed my house. Oh, how if only I had someone to listen to me. I sign now my defense. Let the Lord Almighty answer me. Let my accuser put his indictment in writing. Surely I would put it on like a crown. I would give him an account of my every step.
You have said, I am pure and without sin. Yet God has found fault with me and has made me his enemy. But you're not right with this. God repays a man for what he has done. He brings upon him what his conduct deserves.
Who is this who darkens my counsel with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man, for I will question you. You shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand this. Who marked off its dimensions? On what were its footings set? Or who laid its cornerstone? While the morning stars sang together, and all the angels shouted for joy. Who shut up the sea behind doors when it burst forth from the womb. When I made the clouds its garment, wrapped it in thick darkness. When I fixed its limits. When I said, this far you may come and no farther. Here is where your proud waves halt. Have you ever given orders to the morning? Or shown the dawn its place? That it might take the earth by its edges and shake the wicked out of it. The earth takes shape like clay under a seal. Its features stand out like those of a garment. Have you journeyed to the springs of the sea, or walked in the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been shown to you? Have you seen the gates of the shadow of death? Have you comprehended the vast expanses of the earth? Tell me if you know all of this. What is the way to the abode of light? And where does darkness reside? Can you take them to their places? Have you entered the storehouses of the snow, or seen the storehouses of the hail, which I reserve for times of trouble? What is the way to the place where the lightning is dispersed, or the place where the east winds are scattered over the earth? Who cuts a channel for the torrents of rain, or makes a way for the thunderstorm, to water a land where no man lives, a desert with no one in it? Does the rain have a father? Who fathers the drops of dew? From whose womb comes the ice? Can you bind the beautiful Pleiades? Can you loose the cords of Orion? Do you know the laws of the heavens? Can you set up God's dominion over the earth? Can you raise your voice to the clouds and cover yourself in a flood of water? Do the lightning bolts report to you? Do they say, here we are? Who endowed the heart with wisdom? Who gave understanding to the mind? Who has the wisdom to count the clouds? Do you know when the mountain goats give birth? Do you watch when the doe bears her fawn? Do you count the months until they bear? Will the one who contends with the Almighty correct him? Let him who accuses God answer him.
I am unworthy. How can I respond to you? I have spoken once, and I have had no answer. Twice, and I'll say no more.
Do you have an arm like God's? Can your voice thunder like his? Would you discredit my justice? Would you condemn me to justify yourself? You can't do that. You can't condemn me to justify yourself. But I can. I can condemn myself to justify you. I can take the sin, the guilt, and the pain, put it on myself, and make things right for you. I'm doing this even now. I know that things don't make sense. Now you know in part, but there will come a time when you will know fully, even as you are fully known. promise. I will lift up your head. You will receive the crown of life. Stay with me. See, I've engraved you on the palm of my hands. I will not forget you. Will not forget you.
And God was upset with Job's counselors because they did not speak of him what was right. Their words, while at times had truth to them, were spoken without living knowledge of him. Their spiritual arrogance caused them to claim knowledge they did not possess. And while they spoke about God, Job spoke to God, determined to speak honestly before him. God honored Job's commitment through such a difficult trial and blessed the latter part of his life more than the first. James chapter 1, verse 12 reads, "Blessed are those who persevere under trial, because when they have stood the test, they will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him."
Today we are turning to the book of Job, so I'd encourage you to grab your Bible and turn there to Job chapter 1. And over the last 9 months or so, since October, we've been walking through the Bible's wisdom literature. So we started with Proverbs, which kind of sets this foundation for what is wisdom and how do we live in wisdom. And then Ecclesiastes kind of comes in as this real world corrective of sorts, lest we get kind of too lofty and set in understanding like Job's friends did. It corrects and says, look, the world is not all it's cracked up to be at times. And then to complement these two books and finish out our study, we'll spend the next 6 weeks or so looking at the book of Job. And Job is a book that looks squarely into the face of suffering. It looks into the human experience, much like Ecclesiastes did, but just at a very different angle. And it refuses to kind of make these proclamations that fit really nicely into our boxes or these platitudes about suffering. It doesn't ignore suffering, but it looks squarely in the face of suffering and deals with it. And that should really speak a great deal to every one of us today. I mean, so many of us live day in and day out with some kind of suffering or another. There's three families that I currently am in relationship with in some way, shape, or form right now who are dealing with brain cancer diagnoses. Three. The coronavirus is ravaging our entire world, killing thousands of people on a daily basis, and there are other diseases that are killing many more people on a daily basis. Many are experiencing unexpected loss, financial hardship, mental illness, severe anxiety, depression, addiction. Many lose loved ones. And on top of all that, we have ongoing issues throughout our world of division and conflict and warfare. We have systematic and personal oppression. The scourges of rampant child abuse and abortion and dark realities of human trafficking and sex slavery and racism. And if none of those hit you, you at least, on a personal level, if none of those enter into your experience, there is no doubt, just looking around, that we live in a world that's marked by suffering. So the question is, how do we navigate it? How do we deal with it? How do we understand it? How do we walk through it? And the book of Job will be our companion and teacher as we try to answer this question over the next several weeks. And the book of Job, as we saw in the video, is a very compelling story of this man who is virtuous, upright, godly, wealthy. He had it all, and then he suddenly loses almost everything. His property is taken away from him in one fell swoop. His children, all 10 of them, killed in one accident, and then his health is taken away from him. And he has no idea that behind all of this, behind his entire plight, is all of this is a result of kind of this backroom deal between God and Satan, or this mysterious figure called the accuser. So in the throne room, they've made this wager that's intended to prove the genuineness of Job's faith and his integrity. That's just the first couple chapters. And then there's this extended dialogue with Job and his friends. It's this long poem, and it's this cycle of conversations between them as his friends, make the case over and over again that Job's suffering is the direct result of his sin. Come on, Job, confess. Say, like, tell us. And there's one point where they start making a list of sins. Surely one of these you can at least grab onto and confess. And over again, Job refuses to agree with their hypothesis. He stands in his integrity and he calls God to account for what seems like a gross injustice. And then the dialogue ends, the cycle of dialogue ends when this stranger, this young man, interrupts and gives kind of his own two cents on the matter. And then God shows up and intervenes and calls everyone out on the carpet. He calls them all to account. And in the end, Job is commended. He's restored to a place of prosperity. So as we look at the story itself, I was in a nutshell. There's a minimal cast of characters, right? We have Job at the very beginning, and then we meet God and this strange, the accuser, Satan. And then we have Job's friends. His wife makes a little cameo appearance in there for a couple of verses. But eventually, with these characters, it all, by the end of the book, will tighten down to two characters. We'll focus in on a relationship between two characters, and it's Job and his God. And so as a whole, in the end, it comes down to one man's relationship with God. And Job, this man, we find, was a man of integrity. The story begins there in chapter 1, verse 1, with Job, who's described as blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. Now, Job was a great man. He was very wealthy, prosperous. He was a devoted father with a large family, and he was godly. He feared God. He turned away from evil. He was everything the book of Proverbs could have dreamed of. The guy that was walking the road of wisdom, and then he had all the blessings to go with it. He's such a stellar individual that God himself two times says this of him in chapter 1, verse 8, and then in chapter 2, verse 3, there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil. I mean, that's my dream. If God would just say that about me, I could be done. Go to heaven. My head would be about this big. But wouldn't that be amazing for God to say that? For God himself to say, you are blameless and upright. You fear God and you turn away from evil. Job was an upright man. And let's remember here, too, this phrase, the fear of God. In all of wisdom literature, we've explored it and seen how it's central to all of wisdom. In Proverbs, the fear of God was the beginning of wisdom. Right? In Ecclesiastes, we saw that the fear of God was the end of the matter. And now here in Job, we have the fear of God in a man, displayed as a character in a man that's put to the test in the life of one individual. So it's not just this lofty concept up here. It's something that takes root in a character. And so with God's permission, Satan takes away nearly everything Job has. And we'll look at his response in a minute, but his response is reflective of the character of one who fears God. It's reflective of a man who turns away from evil. Now, there is this other character, his wife, who it could be argued has gone through much the same suffering that he has, except for the illness part. She's lost all of her property as well, all of her possessions, her children as well. And she quickly turns on him, and she turns on God. She says to him in chapter 2, verse 9, his wife said to him, "Do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die." And imagine if you had gone through suffering like this, and at the end you were just angry. And you turn to your husband or your wife, what would you say to them? Would you say, maybe, do you still believe in God? You still believe in a loving God, in a kind God, in a God that cares about you, in a God that's powerful enough to stop your suffering? You still believe in this God? But that's not the, I think that's the kind of question that I would ask, that maybe we would ask. But that's not the question that she asked. She asked him, do you still hold fast your integrity? And integrity is the trait or the character trait of being consistent, of being put together, of being whole and undivided. The opposite of integrity is disintegrity or disintegration. In disintegration, everything falls apart. Integrity is when everything is together. It's a consistency of character at all times. And what suffering and hardship do is they come and they put integrity to the test. They turn up the heat underneath it, and they threaten in that to undermine integrity by radically altering our circumstances, taking everything away, bringing the heat, and tempting our true character. Our true character, unimpeded by prosperity, unimpeded by blessing, they tempt our true character to emerge in the midst of it. And that's all Job's wife is calling out. Isn't your true character going to come out now? Aren't your true colors going to come out? Are you still going to be Mr. Fear of God? And Job's wife, in a sense, asks much the same question as Satan asks. When God's blessings are removed, will you abandon a life built on the fear of God? Or will you continue to fear God and turn away from evil? And this idea of character and integrity, is key to understanding the entire book of Job. This is a book about the integrity of one man's character in relationship with God, no matter what the circumstances, whether blessing or adversity. So let's look at Job's response to unimaginable suffering. And this is crucial display of his character. And quickly, we're going to go through four things here. This is how he responds. First of all, in chapter 1, verse 20, he mourns. Job mourns. He enters into lament. It tells us that he arose and tore his robe and shaved his head. And I was kind of honestly hoping that Jonas would have shaved his head for that video. It would have been really cool. I think it's a good look. He tore his robe, he shaved his head, and it was a tangible, physical, visible expression of his deep mourning, his deep lament. And what mourning and lament is an appropriate emotional human response to suffering. It's a physical expression. When you tear your garments, when you put sackcloth on, when prophets would put, in the Old Testament, would put ash on their heads, this was a physical manifestation of what was going on inside, a suffering, a rending, a mourning, a complaining. In our humanity, we're not unaffected by the hard things that happen around us. And Job isn't just some stoic, dispassionate, unaffected man. He is deeply affected by the suffering. Job mourns. We should mourn. Job humbles himself as well. We continue to read in that very verse that Job fell on the ground. He takes a low place before God. He submits himself physically to God's will. You could just imagine him splayed out, spread eagle, prostrate before God. And he recognizes in that God, not Job, is the one who's in charge. He humbles himself before God. And let me ask you this question. What posture do you take when you go through suffering? When you have questions for God, do you turn your back on him? I'm not talking to you. I'll give you the silent treatment. Do we shake our fist at him? Maybe with the finger sticking out. Or do we fall on our face before God and humble ourselves before him? That's what Job did. Job also worshiped. And worship isn't something that Job did exclusively when things were going well, like in chapter 1, when he was worshiping and offering sacrifices for his family. No, it's not an activity reserved for when you feel like it. We're called to worship in the midst of every circumstances, and maybe especially when we're suffering. And when I speak of worship, I'm not talking about getting in the car and cranking up the Christian radio station and singing along while you're going down the road. That may be an expression of worship, but worship is something much, much deeper than just singing. We're talking about here something that is deep and a complete submission to God. And in that submission, exalting God. submitting ourselves to the will of a good and sovereign God. This is reflected, we see, in Job's words here in chapter 1, verse 21. And he said, in submission, in humility before God, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. He is sovereign. He is in control. He's the giver. He's the taker. Now he worships. Blessed be the name of the Lord. He responds to his wife in chapter 2, verse 10. Shall we receive good from God? Shall we not receive evil? And the deepest kind of worship, I think, takes place in the face of unimaginable suffering. And then finally, Job responds by honoring God. And each time Satan attacks, God himself is honored, he's vindicated in Job's response. And we see this in two parallel statements in chapter 1, verse 22, and then chapter 2, verse 10. In all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. He honors God in what he says and how he lives and how he responds. And his suffering, his response in his suffering informs and frames the rest of the long conversation he's about to have. And it's this overarching character, this fearing God, this turning away from evil that has trained him to respond to suffering in the fear of God. So his character is reflected in his response. He's not just going through the motions here. He's not checking the manual and saying, what do I do now? He's acting out of his integrity, out of his God-formed character. So what do we do with all that? How do we walk with that? Here's a man who's integrous, and if we look at our own hearts, we might question our own integrity, our own uprightness, our own fear of God. And here's a couple things I think we can take away today. And the first is that we as followers of Jesus can surprise the world by suffering well. And a direct result of our relationship with Christ is that we're able to respond differently to suffering than the world does. And part of the Christian life, I think, is learning to suffer well. Learning to suffer well, because when we suffer well as followers of Jesus, the world takes notice. They see that. They know there's a difference. They know we have resources that they don't. Because, brothers and sisters, suffering will come. And we shouldn't be surprised by it when it comes. In fact, we should expect it. We should even prepare for it. Now, I'm not saying that we should just sit around cowering in fear, waiting for that moment when God is just going to unleash Satan and let him have it with us, have his way with us. I'm not saying that, but we should be actively working to cultivate a godly character, a fearing God character. When times are good, like Job did, and then when suffering comes, allow it to be a tool that God would use to perfect us. As James says in James chapter 1, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. That perfect and complete there, that phrase means integrity, that you would be a person of wholeness, of integrity, of completeness like Jesus. And that's the second thing I would call us to this morning, is that the story of Job, the person of Job, his character would point us to look to Jesus, would call us to look to Jesus. Who's the better Job? See, all of us has suffered and none of us has suffered perfectly. Job gives us a pretty good example. A wonderful example of character and integrity in the midst of suffering. However, Job really serves to point us to look to Christ, who is the only man of perfect integrity. Jesus is the example par excellence of fearing God and turning away from evil. He was the truly innocent and upright man who suffered, and in his suffering, he didn't charge God with wrong. And he didn't sin. Peter tells us he committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to the one who judges justly. And then Hebrews tells us that Jesus in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet was without sin. And so in the midst of our suffering, can I call us to look to Jesus, who's the author and the perfecter of our faith, and who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorned its shame, and is now seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Can we look to our King this morning? Let's pray. And Father, as we look at your Son, as we look at Jesus, our perfect example, the righteous one, the integrous one, the man who feared God, who was upright, who turned from evil every chance he got, Lord, we look to Jesus. And in the midst of our suffering, in the midst of the heart, gut-wrenching, soul-wrenching division that we see in our world and even in the church, God, at the ugliness and suffering that we see in cancer, in illness, in systemic oppression, and in abortion, in slavery, Lord, in all of these things that we see in our world, even the things that we ourselves are experiencing, Lord, it's easy to question, to want to shake our fist, to want to turn our back on you and figure it out our own way. But may we be like Jesus. May we look to Jesus, who's our author, who's the author of our faith and the perfecter of our faith, the only one who can make us men and women of wholeness, of integrity, of godliness. So Jesus, would you fill us with your Spirit? Would you do that work in us of making us more like you? We need you, we love you, we trust you. In your name we pray, amen.